The situation in Mitzrayim, which clearly, after the death of the generation of Yaakov and then of the sons, deteriorates. We're told, "Vayakam Melech Chadash al Mitzrayim asher lo yadat Yosef." The new king arises who does not know Yosef. Now, certain elements of this we actually discussed last year. I don't know if you remember. I know some of you don't remember last week, so last year would be a... It seems strange, because Yosef was somebody who was... who exerted extreme impact upon Egypt, upon their economy, upon their living situations for an extended period of time. He ruled there. Again, sometimes we forget that he dies at 110, and he stands in front of Paro at the age of 30. Which means that he ends up being in a position of leadership if he was active till the very end of 80 years. That is a phenomenal amount of time to be in a situation of rule. Rashi brings two opinions. Vayakam melech chadash, Rav v'Shmuel, chadamar chadash mamash, v'chadamar shenitchadshu gzerotav, asher lo yada, asa atzmo ki'ilu lo yada. One says a new king, and the other says it was just that he changed some of his decrees, and he made believe he didn't know. So there was a new deal, if you will. There was a new political philosophy at the time, but it wasn't really a new king. Although, if you think about it, if Yosef really did rule for 80 years, for this new king to come up and not to know Yosef, I would never have suspected that there was one paro for the whole time of Yosef's life anyway. Actually, so one of the commentaries go, which I cut it out because I wasn't going to say it, but he wanted to say, Yom who led it leparo. Remember when Yosef, he says, no, that's the day Paro was born. Yom who led it leparo. It doesn't mean a birthday in the sense of celebrating birth. No, Yom who led it leparo. That's the day that Paro was born, which I think is really pushing things a bit. But to say that Yosef's advice or position of advisor would have been, or second to Paro, would have spanned over one or two or three different paros is completely reasonable. So to say, I mean, to have thought, oh, all these years later, a new king arises, I remember Yosef, I mean, to say, no, it's really the same king itself is strange. Okay, good. Doesn't know Yosef. Yeah, fair. The Ibn Ezra writes, Vayakam Melech Chadash, Pirusho, Kimashma'o, Lo Tosefet, straightforward. Shalohaya Mizera Hamalucha. And again, this we did discuss last year a little more, that when it says, okay, Alken Ktiv Vayakam, means arose. So arose means that there was some kind of a rebellion that took place. There was an upheaval of the whole Egyptian situation, which, by the way, does match historical information over there. And then, and therefore, there was a whole new configuration in terms of the power structure. And therefore, at that point, the Jews became much more suspect. The Sforno adds in source 4, Vayakam Melech Chadash Mitzrayim, Afal Pi Shehaya Zikaron Mimenu, so there was a memory of Yosef, B'Divrei Hayamim L'Malachim, B'li Safek, within the annals of the history books in Egypt, B'Frat B'Inyan V'Chidush Asher Sham L'Chok, Lo Ata Alev HaMelech HaChadash Efsherut Hayitom Mizeh Ha'am. It never occurred to this new king that Yosef and the Jews could possibly be from the same lineage. Which means, again, there was records of there having been a Yosef, but Yosef was a respectable man, and the Jews had become somebody, so these people who were not so respectable. So therefore he says, yes, he knew Yosef, but the connection between Yosef and the Jews wasn't known. Again, how easily that fits into the words we can question, but it's still very interesting as far as a comment. Yeah. And just one more second, and I will remind you that the Sforno himself, living in Italy, did have connections with the leadership, the kings and the popes and the so on, within his lifetime, and he saw in his lifetime how fickle leaders can be. So one always, and we'll like the Barbanel as well, one would always suspect, is there any kind of a personal insight over here? Yes. We also discussed that last year in Parshat Vayechi. And it seems to be that Yosef did distance himself from his brothers at that point. And once his father, was dead, then Yosef does not have that much to do. One of the things that we do notice is that when Yosef's children walk in, Yaakov doesn't recognize them. So mi'ele. So you could say that Yaakov doesn't recognize them because his eyesight, he's losing it. Or you can say very simply, he looks and they look like Egyptian people. And I think that's as reasonable as any other suggestion. No, but we're going to come back to some of that later on as we get on. Look at source number 5. The response to the, again, to them not knowing Yosef, Hava nitchak malo, let's deal with them in a wise way. And you notice that I bolded the word nitchakma. Pen yirbe vayotikrena milchama v'nosaf gam hu alson enu v'nulcham banu v'la min ha'aretz. Because it's interesting, because one of the curses of rebellion, if this is a new king, one of the curses of rebellion is always wondering who's going to rebel next against you. And over here, essentially, the Jews are not trusted as being some kind of authentic part of the Egyptian people. They're seen as outsiders, sometimes organic part of the people. They're due loyalty. They're seen as being outsiders. And consequently, we said if there's any kind of intrigue that they can easily, they will then join our enemies and they will leave. And by the way, that's funny because you could say, okay, they're going to leave, let them leave. But it would have been more sense that they're going to join our enemies and defeat us. So it's also strange. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayisimu alayv sarei misim, and therefore they put people to charge taxes. Leman anato b'sivotom v'ven irim miskanot l'parot pitom et ramses v'kesher enu oto kin yubes. So basically, but they kept on becoming more populated. V'chein yifrots v'yakutz m'nei b'nei Yisrael, and they hated the Jews. V'yavidu Mitzrayim ebnei Yisrael b'farach, and they enslaved them. They made them work very hard b'farach. The Ramban, and again, you did notice that a couple words here I bolded. I'm going to come back to each of those words soon. The Ramban tries to explain what it means nitchakmalo. Let's deal with them in a wise way. And again, the Ramban also had his dealings with the leadership during his lifetime, which resulted in his expulsion. Habanit chakmalo, lower aparo v'chachmei yoetzav lahakot tam b'charev. There was not a decree to go outright and to have a final solution, and just to declare that they will all be killed. Kitia b'gida gdola lakot chinam ha'am ha'shabo ba'aretz mentfad melech harishon, because that would not have played well to attack a people who were invited by the first king, which is also interesting. Okay, do they remember or not remember? Do they know or they not know? Which means they make them... Over here, no, there is a knowledge that these people, the Jews, were invited, but nonetheless, and therefore we can't go out and attack them openly. And also the common people. By the way, this is a very enlightened and optimistic view by the Ramban, by saying the average person in the street would not tolerate if the leadership attacks and tries to commit genocide against the population. One wishes that this was true. Ki mahem hu mityaetz, because he discusses this with the nationals. The af ki bnei Yisrael amrav v'atzum v'yasum v'mochama gdolo, and even though the Jews pose a threat, aval amar she'asu derech chochma, he said, no, let's do this in a wise way, shelo yergishu Yisrael, that the Jews won't sense ki be'evaya asubahem, this was done out of hatred, which means let's make a rule and make laws that they won't know that they are being attacked. Ulekach yitil behem mas, and therefore made for them attacks. Ki derech hagerim ba'aretz la'alot mas lemelech, because it's a normal thing that strangers who live in a country, you give them a higher tax rate. This, by the way, was the norm, and actually created somewhat of a problem. Most of you at some point have heard a concept called dina de mahuta dina, that the law of the country is the law. Now, what if the law of the country is not fair? So, I think many of you know that there's a long-standing Jewish tradition not to pay taxes or to cheat on taxes and so on. Now, there could have been a certain situation where that would be justified. What would that situation be? If the tax system was unfair, which means if you have two neighbors, and one, because they're Jewish, would end up paying 50% more than the person who's non-Jewish. So if you have a non-equitable tax system, in such a case, then one could say, okay, the law of the land is an unjust law, and being that it's an unjust law, so one does not have to keep the unjust law. But if the tax system is just, then no one has any right to go against the tax system. So over here, he's saying, is that let's create an unjust tax system, but it's interesting the way he couches it, which may actually have more validity, but as I said, this could be debated in a separate discussion, but the point is that any nationals, any people, again, part of the organic Egyptian people, have one tax system, and any people that come from other places have a different tax system because they're basically unnaturalized citizens, and therefore they are staying in our land, and we're going to tax them differently. So it's very interesting, you know, politically, what the Ramban is suggesting, and he says that that's actually a normal thing, as we see later on. And then it was secretly the mieldot were told to kill the males. And even the woman who gave birth didn't realize what was taking place, which means that he's telling us that let's find ways of doing this in a very surreptitious manner that people won't sense it. And only later on did this become Nuremberg laws, if you will, where all Jews will be, or not even Nuremberg, the final solution. Yeah. He didn't want to, again, Sarha Tabachim back in Bereshit. There was always two commentaries what it means. One, you would think the chief, what is a Tabach, a cook? No. Others understood Sarha is the chief executioner. So it's clearly the way that he's using it over here, unless Egyptian food was really bad. And that would have done him in. L'sareya Tabachim Ashelo Lahargam Becherev. The rule is everyone go kill any Jewish kids. But if anybody comes and complains to the king, again, here you'll love the politics over here, the disingenuousness of this. If anybody comes and complains to the king, El Sar Ha'ir, the mayor, whoever is running the city, Yomru, Shiavi Eidim V'Yasebo Nekama. Bring witnesses of what happened, and we will put the person up on trial. So, V'Kasher Hutra, Ritzu'at HaMelech, Hayu HaMitzrim, Mechapsim HaBatim, V'Nechnasim Shem V'Leilot, Mitnakrim, U'Motzim Eladim Misham. But later on, when the decree became more harsh, then they just, you know, opened season on Jews. Again, what's very interesting that he's suggesting over here is that there was a facade of law, a facade of the Jews being accepted, but nonetheless, vonit chakmalo means let's nonetheless kill as many of them as possible in as many ways as possible. Let's raise taxes as much as possible. And even, again, kill them even when they come and complain. So we'll say, bring witnesses, we'll put up on trial, and we'll have the facade of there being an equitable legal. Correct. And that's the way they're correct. Absolutely. That's the way they're about. Listen, how cynical is it to say, go kill them, but if they complain that you're killing, bring witnesses and we'll put the person on trial for killing that you sent? I mean, I don't think you can get more cynical than. Right. No, I'm saying, no, it's. I think the cynicism is worse than it being devious. It's devious, but again, how cynical is it to say, oh, you bring witnesses that this guy killed your kid and we will put them on trial? The fact that you say, hold it, who sent them? You sent them. Oh, no. That's, so as I said, it's not, it's, that's the way the Ramban understood, bo nitchakmalo, let's deal with them in a wise or devious way. Now, the thing that I find ironic about all this, and what I'm going to try to do today, is actually to go back and to compare a couple of things at the beginning of Shemot with a couple of things at the in the last third of Bereshit, and to see to what extent is there a memory of Yosef. Which you say, oh, so we don't remember Yosef, but how much of this really is directly connected to Yosef? And the truth is there's many, many more things that I could have said. There's a lot of Yosef, would be the right word, reverberations that you can find over here in the beginning of Shemot. Again, just for example, when Moshe goes out, right? What's that in Perek Bet? When Moshe goes out, what does it say that he does? It says Moshe is looking for something. Yes. Vayihi b'yimimahem. This is Perek Bet Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayihi b'yimimahem. V'yigdal Moshe. V'yetzei el echav. V'yar b'sivlotam. He goes out and he's seeking his brothers. Again, it doesn't use that word, but again, he's going out to his brothers. V'yetzei el echav. So who was the last one that you remember? Et achai ani mevakesh. Who's looking for his brothers? I mean, that this is a very clear indication. He sees their pain. Vayar ish mitzri makei ish avri mechav v'yifin kol v'chov v'yar ki ein ish v'yachad tzvi v'tzvinu b'chov v'yitzim v'yimashim v'yineshin anashim v'vrim nitzim v'yom l'rasha l'ma t'kareach v'yom ha'mi samcha l'ish saru v'shofet aleinu. Does that remind you of anything? Who put you as a leader on top of us? Hamaloch t'mloch aleinu? Which means that there is an echo of the Yosef story right over here. Of course, the powerful part of it is the emotion that we never really explore enough, and that is that Yosef will rule over them, right? Yosef will rule over his brothers on the one hand. On the other hand, he is looking out for the best interest of his brothers. And over here, Moshe is the ruler over them. Who put you up? I mean, Moshe does grow up in the palace. He is brought up on Paro's knee. He is brought up by Paro's daughter. He is put in charge of them. But nonetheless, which means it's actually the narrative there of Yosef, which never becomes as clear as it should, is right here, literally, in the introduction when we meet Moshe as an adult. It's all right over here. So I'm just pointing out that there is an echo of this, but I want to show some more. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yafet. So now, correct. And there's a lot more parallel. If one is looking for something to look for those parallels, there are a lot more. But I want to look at a couple of specific things. The words that I bolded over here in source number 5 were nitchakma, nosaf, misim, yirbe, and vayavidu. Right, and you notice it wasn't a really large section. It was over 4 verses that I bolded those words. If we look over 2 verses, when Yosef is introduced to Paro, Vayomer Paro, right in source 7, Perek Mem Aleph in Bereshit, Vayomer Paro Elavadav, and Nimtza Ish Asher Ruach Elokimbo. We'll see more about that soon. Vayomer Paro El Yosef. Now notice the word Yosef and Nosaf, which I think I may be pushing it a bit. Acharei Hodia Elokimotcha, et kol zot ein navon v'chacham kimocha. That the person who is the epitome of tvuna and chachma, being navon and chacham, is Yosef. So it's interesting that Yosef is somebody who creates a long-term plan for Egypt, which is already is presented right there, and Paro immediately recognizes this and say, you know, ein chacham kimocha, there's no navon v'chacham kimocha. The Rashbam is troubled or wants to explain what's the difference between navon and chacham. In source 8, the Rashbam writes, navon mevin atidot v'ro'e hanolad. And it's true to a certain extent. Before we finish, we'll see why we perhaps should limit this. But it's true. Yosef walks in and creates immediately a 14-year economic plan for Egypt, which saves Egypt's economy. He does many other things along the way, but therefore Navon is Mevin Atidot, understands the future, but Ra'et Onolad, Ezu, but right, he sees how things would develop. Chacham, he gathers information by things that he sees and hears. That's the way the Rashbam explains the two, Navon v'chachma. Now, as far as the other part goes, where in Pasuk Lamed Chet, where it uses the phrase Ruach Elokim, he has the Spirit of God, I'll also point out that later on, previous to this, in Perek Lamed Tet, it also spoke about Yosef's relationship with Elohim. And there is what we discussed a couple of weeks ago by Eshet Potiphar, where he is presented with this offer, and his response is, let's take a look at source 10. V'yachadur me'ele v'tisa eshet adonav et enea el Yosef, v'tome shechva imi v'yama'in v'yome el eshet adonav, hin adoni lo yada itimam b'bayet v'chole shelo natan b'yadi, einenu gadol b'bayet hazem imenu v'lo chasach menu mu'uma ki imotach b'asher at ishto. And here, okay, Yosef describes the whole situation. She makes her offer. Yosef says, how can I treat my master in such a terrible way? But then he says, "Ve'eich eseh hara gdol hazeh v'chatati l'elokim." How can I sin in such a terrible way and sin against God? And again, this is interesting that Yosef brings God into the situation. He also does this, and this is also something we've seen before, he does this time and time again in his discussion with Paro, which eventually gets Paro to mimic Yosef and say back there in source 7, is there a man, kazeh ish asher ruach elokim bo, which means, why would Paro even speak in those terms, ruach elokim? But nonetheless, Yosef is somebody who's even given him this language. So Yosef is somebody who, for lack of a better term right now, I would describe him as somebody who has Yirat Elohim. Why would I say Yirat Elohim? Because Yosef is able to take his religious view, his religious orientation, and use it in order to prevent him from doing something which sees him as being immoral. Okay? That is Yosef's Yirat Elohim. And he says it clearly. If I do this, v'chatati l'elokim, then I would have sinned against God. Yeah. So as I said, at least what Paro does is he mimics him. At least,
if he were
really a strong king, he was so, and I'll say it again, that as minimum, Yosef gets Paro to speak from, right? There's a book called From Speak, right? He gets him to speak from within a couple of minutes. Paro's already saying Baruch Hashem and Emir to Hashem and so on. Whether he really means it or not is harder to say.
Right.
I'm saying the whole way Yosef is, right. Yosef brings him into this worldview, but you see Paro. But at least he gives it lip service. That's the point. But Paro doesn't concern me right now. But there's somebody else who does remember Yosef. And what I said is somebody else who does remember Yosef. And that's source 9 that we just skipped. Go back, and this is in Perek Aleph, going back in Shmot. Vatir ena hamiladot et Elokim. The miladot have yirat Elokim. Okay, so I'm just now pointing out this contrast that this behavior of the yiladot, of the what we call them, the midwives, where they refuse to listen to Paro's plan, let's treat him in this devious way. It said, no, v'tir ena miladot elokim. So if I look for a previous parallel of somebody who is willing to withstand the pressure of a superior because of their fear of God, so then Yosef becomes the perfect role model for what the miladot do over here, and it comes again later on. Vayitev Elokim lemadot vayira ha'am v'yatzmu ma'od. Now that's very interesting because it says that the response vayitev Elokim lemadot, that God, what is that? How would you translate that? That God found favor or he did good for them. Vayitev Elokim lemadot. Excuse me. Vayitev Elokim lemadot. Vayirev ha'am v'yatzmu ma'od, and the result was one of the nation becoming even more populated. Now, again, this is something that when we look at it at first glance, we'll say that there's a cause and effect. What is the cause and effect? The cause and effect would be that Paro says, "Kill the children." The children aren't killed, so therefore the Jews multiply. It may be deeper than this. Tradition tells us that they're Jews. Later on, it says, "Pasuk Kaf Aleph, v'yihu ki yir'uha miladot et Elokim." You see it again, Yirat Elokim. Again, you just look at this thing. Yirat Elokim is throughout this part. And then it says, Vayas lehem batim. He made for them homes. So what does that mean, Vayas lehem batim? There's many interpretations on that. So that's the way that Rashi explains it. But Vayaseh lehem batim, I mean, it doesn't have to be future-oriented, you know, way down the line, kahuna. I mean, there could be something which is a little bit more immediate. But there may be something deeper about the correlation between the Yirat Elokim on the one hand and then the children being born on the other hand. So just hold on to that for a second. Yes. No, I didn't say Moshe right now. What I was talking about, the Milat Torah. Take a look at sources 15 and 16. Yosef, as I pointed out, has this Yirat Elokim, and he actually also receives a bracha. So let's take a look and we'll see about the bracha that he receives. Over here in source 15, it's Perek Memchet, back in Bereshit. Vayivarech et Yosef, vayomar helokim asher hitalchu avotai lefanav avram yitzhak, velokim horeoti meodi adi yom hazeh, hamalach hogoeloti mikorai yivarechet inarim, vikorvim shmi v'shem otai, avram yitzhak, viyidgu lerov bekerav haaretz. So Yosef's children, we're told, will become populated all over the land. Vayidgu lerov bekerav haaret. Now, just in case you think that that's just, you know, over here, perhaps a turn of phrase, to the way that it's translated over here. They will grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. If you paid attention to the Kriyat Torah by Yosef yesterday, by the bracha Yosef receives in source 16, Perek Memtet, Ben Parat Yosef, Ben Parat Alei Ayin, Benot Sa'ada Alei Shur. Okay, starting with Pasuk Kafbet. Vayimruhu v'rabu v'yistemu ba'alei chitzim. Vateshev be'itan kashto v'yafuzu zara yadav midei avi Yaakov mishamara evin Yisrael. Pasuk Kafhe. Me'el avicha v'ya'azreka. The God of your father should help you. Ve'et Shaddai v'yivercheka, bruchot shamayim me'al, bruchot tahom, rovetzet tachat, bruchot shadayim v'racham. Now, the name Shakai, which we read in this verse, is a name which, if you look at all of its usages in Bereshis, always is connected to having children. Even if you think you find cases that it's not the case, it's still the case. It's only used a number of times. The first time the name is used is when Avraham is commanded for Brit Milah, for circumcision. The name Shakai is always connected to children. The name Shakai focuses on Yosef. I think it's mentioned 5 times in Bereshit. 3 of the 5 times is connected to the narrative with Yosef. I've written about this if somebody wants to know more about this. But look at the words over here. Well, I'll read it in English. By the God of your father who shall help you, and by the Almighty who shall bless you, with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies under, blessings of the breasts and blessings of the womb. I don't think you can get stronger in terms of fertility symbols than that, which means Yosef's blessing is one of fertility. It was said before regarding Ephraim and Manasseh, and it's said over here again regarding Yosef himself, which means the blessing that Yosef receives is a blessing of fertility. So now, again, I just want to look at this in this broader sense. Yosef has Yirat Elokim, the blessing he has is one of fertility. You now realize that the midwives have Yirat Elokim, and immediately afterwards, what are we told? And the Jewish people multiply. Now, we wouldn't have noticed that connection at all had we not realized that the role model for these, again, as much as Paro does not remember Yosef, over here it seems to be that both the midwives and then Moshe do remember Yosef, and Yosef, therefore, as much as Egypt tries to forget Yosef and pushes Yosef aside and so on, and again, we're going to come back to that because there is something more devious here, as much as they are rejecting the memory of Yosef, we find among the Jews an acceptance of Yosef, but I'm saying even to the extent that there is a spiritual blessing over here where Yosef is connected with fertility, we find the same thing over here as well, that the Yirat Elokim connected with the midwives then transfers into this fertility which takes place as well. Was that clear? What did you want to say? You already forgot what you want to say?
I like that.
You like that? That's what you wanted to tell me. You like that, okay.
Well, the midwives really have to be Jewish.
That's the general tradition, yeah.
Does that refer also when he says in the Pesach Haggadah and they come to this, so that's a reference to Yosef? That's a nice.
Look, I've said it before. I think that to a very great extent, the whole Pesach Seder has to do with Yosef, which means on the way down to Egypt, the brothers stop. Sorry, before Yosef is sent to Egypt, right before the sale, the brothers sit down and have a meal together, right? And that meal is the meal that represents Mechirat Yosef, right? He's screaming from the pit, as we understand later on in the narrative. He's screaming from the pit, and they're sitting down and eating. Before we leave Egypt, you need to have a meal where the whole family comes together, which means that there's very much, it's the tikkun, it's the healing that needs to take place in order now to go back where we came from. Just like last week we discussed, okay, Yosef's going to have to be returned to Shechem eventually. The Jewish people need to sit as an entire family, to merge as a family, because going down to Egypt represented not being a family. So I think that there's lots of elements involved in the whole Pesach Seder, the whole experience, that has to do with the end of this. But the reference, the line that you were connecting to is there as well. Yes. Correct. But I'm saying this part right here is not about land. This meaning I could with Ephraim and Asher begin to, but it's not what it says. The rove, the care of arts, they're going to multiply. They're going to become big tribes. And over here we realize that the blessing that Yosef receives, compare this blessing with all the other brothers. It's only over here by Yosef that we find this real blessing of fertility. And again, I don't know how you can have stronger fertility symbols than the symbols that are in this verse. I mean, of course, that when you go to yeshiva, they probably skip it because it says words that you're not supposed to say. So therefore, Jewish children never read it. But
it's not the only part.
It's not the only thing they skip. There are whole chapters. No, it's no joke. There are whole chapters which are skipped because we couldn't possibly say those words. We've become more puritanical than the Christian societies that surround us, to the point that we end up confusing people. But over here, it's like we can't even say the words, we can't understand the symbols. This is a symbol of fertility, and I'm pointing out to you that I happen to know that the name Shakai is related to this idea of spreading. And look, the Gemara says, what does the word Shadai mean? Sha'omar la'olam dai. What does it mean? It says that when God created the world started expanding and expanding and expanding, and God finally says to stop the expanding. But it's the word sha'omar dai. I mean, enough. Dayenu, if you want to go back to Dayenu. Sha'omar dai. And that's the name. Because it also indicates that's where it comes back to Brit Milah. And the verse you're referring to, Sha'omalach b'damai chayi, is exactly that point about fertility. That's exactly the issue about it. And the idea of the blood by the Brit Milah, the blood by the Korban Pesach. Again, if somebody wanted, they can talk a lot about it. There's a lot more to talk over here. Some rabbi's listening right now who's going to have his Shabbat HaGadol Drasha based on what I'm saying right now.
If
he's allowed to say in the words. And that's why Brit Milah is used with this name, because it indicates self-control and self-limitation, which means a Jewish nation can't exist until man understands that we have the ability of controlling our instinctual urges, which means that's when, that's Brit Milah, and that's this name, Sha'olam Dai, this ability of self-control, but it goes together with fertility, which means Jewish type of fertility, which means is this bracha of Yirat Elokim, somebody who has the Midah of Gvura. The Midah of Gvura is Ezo Hu Gibor HaKoveshet Yitzro, this idea of self-control. That's what creates a Jewish nation. So I said there's a lot more to talk about this.
Is this related to taking a Yosef and giving someone who can't have children, Gvura, who have children?
I don't know about brachot. I know that before you eat bread.
You just read me,
bro. I know before you eat bread, you say hamotzi. I don't know so much about the other types of brachot. Okay, so again, I'm just going to repeat this again. As much as we're saying that Paro, right, lo yada et Yosef, it seems to be that there are others in this narrative that do know Yosef. Now, the words, again, just in case we've already gotten lost, in source number 5, again, Hava nitchakma v'nosaf. Is the word nosaf over here a reference to Yosef? I'm saying that you know, when you read it, you never would have said that, but then you see some of these other things. Ken ya'anuoto ken yirbe. Okay, they become numerous. The word misim, we'll come back to the misim in a second, vayavidu, and they caused the Jews to be enslaved. Now my question here is, and really how much of this is due to the fact that they forgot the Jews, forgot Yosef, which leads us to source number 11. And number 11 is really this disturbing element that we don't always think about, or we don't think about the possible implications of it. I heard you say it in the beginning. It's okay. I heard you say it in the beginning. And that is that, what did Yosef do to the Egyptians? He basically enslaved them all. Let's read the description in Perek Mem Zayin. Start again, source 11, starting Pasuk Ted Vav. I mean, I'll even go back a couple verses before that. Pasuk Yud Bet. V'yichalkel Yosef et aviv et achiv et kol beit aviv lechem lefi ataf. Yosef provides food for his father, his brothers, and everyone according to him. Rations according to the size of the family and number of children. V'lechem ein b'chol ha'aretz ki kaved or av ma'od. There was no bread in Egypt. V'teila eretz Mitzrayim v'eretz Canaan b'fnei Arav, and the lands of Egypt and Canaan were people fainted because of the famine. V'yalket Yosef et kol ha'kesef v'nemtza b'eretz Mitzrayim. Yosef gathered all the money of eretz Canaan, the land of Canaan, b'shever, for the grain which they bought, asher shovrim, which they exchanged it for the grain. V'yavei Yosef et kol ha'kesef beit ha'paro. Yosef gathered all the money and he brought it to Paro. Now again, as we now get to Pasuk Ted Vav, I'm just going to ask you a simple question. To what extent was Yosef loved and respected in Egypt? And of course you can ask, which parts of Egypt? Is it the house of Paro? To what extent was he loved and respected? And now I can ask, within Egypt itself, was Yosef loved and respected? Because Yosef, basically, with all of his cleverness and all his ability to see ahead, Yosef did accomplish something. And what was that? Yosef, through his chokhmah, right, ended up enslaving the entire Egyptian population. So let's read the description. Yeah. During the years of plenty, it was probably easier to take things, but it set them up, because now during the years when they needed it, now what's he selling back to them? He's selling back to them the same things that he took from them. I know, but you're saying even then there would have been...
Sure, because why should we be rich? And Yosef says, no, you have to save, because in another 7 years you're going to have blah.
But I would even say it was probably like America, when they grow too much wheat, that you have too much, you don't know what to do with it. You have too much. They probably had too much. There was so much plenty, they had too much. And Yosef is the only one with the foresight to say, oh, you have too much? Let me take it off your hands. Let me help you. I'll store it. Again, then he'll sell it back to them, which is the beautiful part. Pasuk Ted Vav. V'yitoma kesef beret etzrayim uberetz kanan v'yivo kol mitzrayim v'yosef v'lemar havalanu lechem v'lamalamut nigdecha. There's no money left. That's it. Nobody has any money left. Yosef has now all the things which he took from them. Ki ofes kasef, because the money is all gone. Vayomi Yosef havu miknechem, v'nelechem miknechem, im ofes kasef. Yeah. He says, okay, give me all your cattle. And with all your cattle, I'll give you, and, right, if your money is gone. Vayivu miknechem Yosef, itain lehem Yosef, lechem besusim v'knat zon, v'knat bakar v'chamorim. Yosef, in exchange for all over their cattle, their flock, and so on, horses, cattle, flock, and so on. And then he gave them for that. He gave them food, bread for all of their flock and so on that year. But when that year came to end, they came in the second year. We have nothing else left. We already gave you all our money. We gave you all our cattle. All that we have left is our, basically, is our bodies and our land. Why should we die? Buy us and our land so we can have food. And us and our land will be enslaved to Paro. And therefore the land will not become desolate. But you can Yosef at Kol Admat Mitzrayim. Yosef bought all the land of Egypt. Ki machru Mitzrayim ish sadeh ki chazak alei marav. Because each person sold their field because the famine was so great. But he arutz the Pharaoh, and now Pharaoh owned all the land. So I just want to point out, you know, as much as we're going to have later on, havanit chakma lo, what we have over here is Yosef's chokhmah, again, very, very clever. But was there, this is really the question, was there collateral damage from Yosef's wisdom? Did his wisdom cause there to be some kind of collateral damage? Continuing Pasuk Aleph, ve'et ha'am he'evira to la'arim, miktei gvul Mitzrayim ve'el katseyu. And as for the people, he moved them to cities from one end of the borders of Egypt to the other end of it. Rak admata kohanim lo kana ki chok lekohanim eit paro v'achluot chukam asher natan lem paro al ken lo machruot admatam. But there was a law in line for the priests. And if you don't remember, Yosef's father-in-law was a priest. Potiphar was a kohen. He, right? So no. That's Moshe's father-in-law. Yeah. Potipharah was in fact a priest. So anybody want to make accusations of nepotism, so you could feel free to. You, as you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Pasuk of Gimel. Vayomu Yosef el ha'am. Now you just have to tell me, I'm going to read this, and you'll tell me how this was accepted, tone of voice, if this is a good thing or a bad thing, if this is gloating or if this is... Vayomu Yosef el ha'am. Hin kaniti etchem hayom ve'et admatchem leparo. That's it. I've bought all of you and all of your land for Paro. Heilachem zera uzaratem et abadama. Now I'm going to give you seeds to plant the land which Paro owns, which you used to own. Which means now you're going to work for me on your own properties. Posekav dalid vaya bitfuatu netatam chamishit leparo, and then now you're going to give a fifth of it to Paro, 20%. Va'arba yadot yelachem, and you can keep 80% lezaras adel lecholam asher bevatechem lecholatapchem. You can keep 80% of it in order to plant and to eat and take care of yourselves. So what's their response to this? Pasukafei vayomer hechiyatanu nimtachin ve'inei adoni ve'tavadim leparo. And they said, "You've saved our lives. Let us find grace in you, and we will be slaves to Paro," which means they see it as again, slaves, avadim, slavery. But yasem otam Yosef lachok ad hayom hazeh, Yosef made this law, this decree, till this very day. Ad admat al admat shrine, the land of Egypt, the Paro, the Chomesh, Paro gets 20%. Rak admat akonim lo vadam lo itel Paro. And with the exception of the land of the Kohanim. And just notice how this ends. Vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Goshen, Be'eretz Mitzrayim, Be'eretz Goshen, but the Jews are in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen. V'yechazuba v'yifru v'yirbu ma'od. And again, this idea of fertility comes up at the end of this particular section. So what do we have over here? Just one second. What do we have over here? We have a very clear description of but it's not just a feudal system which was created. It's Nitchakma, it's Yosef's wisdom, which turns into the slavery of the Egyptians. And you also hear something among the Egyptians. There even is a sense of relief. Why? Because of what the alternative was. And even this sense of, well, thank God, Baruch Hashem, we are slaves of Paro. But now Yosef has created slavery. Yeah.
A joke to them, and that's why they were so grateful.
Correct, correct. Absolutely. The terms which are given over here, that only the Paro only gets 20%. It could easily have been the other way around. He gave them great motivation to work. But they see. But they say, yeah, no, we are slaves to Paro. I'm pointing out something very simple. That when we read the, again, how did all this start? That there's a new king. Yeah.
The new king actually does to Mesraim what Yosef did.
Exactly. Yeah, the new king does to the Jews exactly what Yosef did to the Egyptians. That's exactly what I wanted to show over here.
And the connection is by Yifru, by Munod.
Correct.
That's the reason why I was doing it.
Correct, which means what happens over here to the Jews, again, I want to go back and ask and now point this out, the process which takes back of slavery is a reversal of the process which Yosef had instituted on the Egyptians, which means for all that, again, I don't want to attack Yosef, but all to say, again, as we saw before, I believe it was the Rashbam, when Tfuna, who ra'at atid, yes, he saw the next 14 years. The question is, did he see the next 140 years? And how this is now going to come back against them, which it did. I will add it. Yeah.
They ought to make a compromise.
Right. And that's very interesting.
You must say something that put us in a certain position.
Source 14. But before we read 14, let's just take a look first at 12 and 13. But then we'll get to 14 in a second. 12 in source 12, Rashi says, "Vayinu avadim leparo," which is the verse that you were excited about. Lalot lo hamas hazeh b'chol shana. No, we're willing to pay this all, which again is what you quoted from Shani is correct, is that no, they were very enthusiastic about that. We will be avodim, we're very happy to pay this price, because normally an eved, a slave, has much less say into it. Okay, and they were not exactly in a position to negotiate because they had lost everything. So at this point, they're very enthusiastic, but and by the way, I'll point out, according to Rashi, the word that he uses here is mas. They see it as a tax. That was one of the words that we had bolded there in the very beginning of Shmot, the word mas. So again, you can say it's okay, it's cheating a little bit to use Rashi, but it's really not. Because that's what had happened here. Look at the Malbim in source 13. Vayomer hachietani, you know, you've given us life. Amru ma she'anachnu avadim einu ba'ar adama, ki kavod gadol lanu shenei avdei hamelech. Va'ata hachietanu mitzad hachesed. That we will be slaves to Paro, which means that it sounds like what they're saying is that there's great honor to work for the federal government. There's great honor to be working for Paro because now we are now connected to Paro, which means a person could work for themselves or a person could be part of Paro's. Part of the palace, as it were. So, of course, what's happened now? The palace now has its tentacles have gotten through the whole land. But for them, they're saying that there's an honor involved in this that we are now part of Paro's.
Yosef was actually smarter because he got those Egyptians into this
good PR. Oh, they did. That's exactly the point. That's what she was looking for. But it's a very famous midrash, which I'm going to show you. Even though it's very famous, I had a hard time finding it. Yeah, yeah.
Oh. Isn't it part of the plan that the Israel would be slaves in the country?
Yes. And that's another side of the same coin. It is part of God's will. You know, the Rambam plays with this, but on the other side, the other way. How could Paro be punished? Because it was part of God's will that the Jews be enslaved. And that's not an easy question. You can say it was degrees. He never said to kill the firstborn. He never said that. I mean, again, there's all kinds of things you can say afterwards. But just because something is part of God's decree doesn't mean it has to play itself out in this particular way. Which is the way it plays itself out. It's not as if Yosef is sitting there without any kind of free will. Yosef has free will. He thinks this is the best way to do it. And I'm just pointing out that, yeah, my book is called Echoes of Eden, that not all the echoes are from Eden. Here's an echo, reverberation, of the Yosef story that now leads directly into the beginning of Shemot. And again, once you're looking for, you know, it's almost like misdirection, right? Misdirection is, you know, it's a sleight of hand. What was the misdirection here? No, he doesn't remember Yosef. Yosef's not here. No, Yosef is here. Yosef is here hovering over everything which is taking place, including the economic situation. And I want to add one more element that maybe we forgot. What do the Ibn Ezra say, which again is most likely connected to the historical reality? That there's a new paro here. Now, if there's a new paro, there's one of two possibilities. Either someone from the outside has come and conquered Egypt, which again, there may be historical sources to suggest that, or there's been a rebellion within the land. Now, if there's been a rebellion within the land, I just want to play with that a little bit. If there's been a rebellion within the land, who's rebelling? The people who were slaves. Who are they rebelling against? The ones who enslaved them. So who enslaved them? Paro enslaved them. But who was the one behind the plan? And that's Yosef. I don't remember. Bo nitchak malo. Let's now do the exact same thing which Yosef did to us. Let's do it back to him. Now, right.
Right.
I don't know if you noticed. I never made a value judgment over here. I'm just pointing out that Yosef is still part of the story.
I know he's part of the story.
Right, right. That's all. That's
even
all.
The bigger story.
Right. Correct. I can't answer you. I didn't see his two dads hood. Let's take a look at source number 14. Okay, I'm going to skip the first couple lines. Actually, the context is when Moshe asked to gather the leaders to help. When Paro said, come, let's deal with them in a wise way. The Jews were gathered together and said, "Asu imi hayom b'tova, come, volunteer. Let's say, where's your sense of volunteerism? Come and volunteer today and come and help." Now, what does farech really mean? Hard work. So over here, it's translating b'farech b'perach, which means the opposite. What does perach mean? With a soft cell. It's the soft cell. It's beferach, with a mouth which is very natal sal umagrifa niya roed paro no tel sal umagrifa vose bilavanim veloya ose miyad veloya ose, that anybody who saw that Paro was starting to work, they immediately grabbed, you know, work materials as well. Right? Miyad. Okay, miyad hochu kol Yisrael bezrizut. All the Jews went enthusiastically. Vasuimah b'kol kochol afisha yu balei koach giborim. They all went, and they want to be part of this, and they want to be part of Paro's team, and they want to work with Paro, and Paro's working. Of course, what ends up happening then is the continuation. The midrash says, okay, the next day or as time goes on, Paro disappears, and suddenly there are shotrim, and the shotrim start beating them. And the next thing they know, that they have now found themselves into slavery. But what's interesting about this midrash is it goes out of the way to say something which isn't there in the text. The text says, right, avodat parach, right? They work hard labor. And it says, no, beferach. Now, hard labor starts beferach. It starts with a soft cell. So where's the soft? Why are they saying this? So this becomes the exact parallel going back to the story of Egypt. So that would seem to be the motivation to show how the Yosef story is parallel. By the way, it goes on to say that there were Jewish slave, you know, taskmasters as well, and they took the beatings for the Jews. That's in the same midrash, and those are the ones that were told those should be the elders. The ones that took the beatings, so there's those to be elders, which is interesting because that's also the background of the story of Moshe seeing the taskmaster beating the Jew, taking the beating, and so on, where Moshe then gets involved. So that's the continue. I mean, if you want, we'll look at it. Right. No. That's very interesting. Correct. But you look where it's a little lower down. What's underlined? But you shotrim mukin al yeter ha'am v'lo hayu mosrim al tobi de nokshim, that the Jews would get built and they would not hand them over. Omrim mutav anu l'kot v'al yichshelu yeter ha'am. It's better for us to get beaten rather than to give them over. Lefichach kishamar kodesh baruch hu asafel li shivim ish mezeknei Yisrael v'moshe lefidei kodesh baruch hu ribonu sholem ein yodei mi ra'ui. Well, mi einu ra'ui. I don't know who's worthy. Amalo asher yadata, the ones that you know, ki hem zeknei ha'am v'shotrim otana zeknim v'shotrim shayu mosrim atzman lukot aleim b'mitzrayim b'mitkanot ha'levanim yavoi v'kli b'gadlut Bigdulazu. The ones who suffered then, they're the ones who should be taken now. So I said that Medrash, it's almost like closes full circle. Let's finish up for today and take a look at source number 17, the Targum, and look how he translates the pasuk that we started with. V'kam malka chadita al Mitzrayim d'lo mikayim gzerat Yosef, who did not follow Yosef's decree. Hold it. What's Yosef's decree? That goes back to the 40%, to the 20% and the 80% and the land and so on. A new king came who no longer followed Yosef's decree. So I think that the way that the Targum over here understands it, even though he does not explain, I still had to work hard having known this because I had to show all the pieces, but I think he's saying the exact same thing that I did. The Targum Yonatan says the same. V'yakom el chadash kimo b'hatchala al Mitzrayim shelo yadat Yosef v'lo halach b'chukav. He did not follow the decrees of Yosef. The Psikta in source 19 shelo yadat Yosef kimo shelo yada et Yosef. Shere Yosef yviet akesef beta paro. Yosef brought all the money to Paro. V'kanak kol admat Mitzrayim leparo and brought all the land. V'tiken alei amas and created the taxes. Shenema v'nat chamishit leparo. V'ficha k'tov shelo yadat Yosef. Which again, meaning that's the background. So, look, let's just finish this up by saying the obvious, very sad point. Sometimes what goes around comes around. That Yosef enslaved the entire Egyptian population, and they then turned around and enslaved the Jews. But for that matter, if you want to go back to the larger plan, the brothers sold Yosef as a slave, and they all ended up becoming slaves. Yes, there's Yad Hashem in the background of everything which is happening. I'm just pointing out some of the details of the Yad Hashem, like some of the fingerprints over here of the Yad Hashem, which sometimes we miss, and say, no, that Yosef is right here, clearly present and accounted for on both sides. The king doesn't remember Yosef. That doesn't mean he doesn't remember Yosef. He does not follow the decrees of Yosef. In fact, he's going against them and he's using them. He's inspired by them. He's just turning those around against the Jews in order to enslave the Jews now after the Egyptians had been enslaved. On the other hand, the moral stature of Yosef, the one who has Yirat Elohim, the one who withstands sin, that we clearly see, concerned they will not kill the Jews, and the response of the Yirat Elohim is that the Jews then multiply, just like the bracha that Yosef had in terms of multiplying. So I'm saying Yosef is clearly, clearly right over here throughout the whole story. So don't get fooled by saying, oh, didn't remember Yosef, so this is a new story. It's not a new story. It's a continuation of the old one.